It's time for the Secrets of Staffing Success from Haley Marketing. Candid conversations with entrepreneurs and thought leaders in staffing and recruiting.
How do you guys differentiate yourselves from your competitors? Is ACA a threat or an opportunity for the staffing industry? How can the staffing industry improve the candidate experience? What will be keeping you up at night over the next 2 years?
And here's your host, Todd Lewandowski.
Welcome to another great episode of Secrets of Staffing Success, coming to you from a, well, rather gloomy and rainy Buffalo, New York. My golf clubs keep looking at me saying, hey, remember us? Don't forget about us. Now, sometimes in Buffalo, we go right from winter to summer, and that's just how it goes here in the Northeast. But we'll press on. Of course, you can always find this show on all of the usual places, on iTunes, on Google Play, on Spotify, on Stitcher, anywhere where you download a podcast, you can find us. Just search for Secrets of Staffing Success. And last week, I asked you guys if you had any questions at all that you'd like us to address on the show, marketing staffing-related questions, to send it over to Todd at HaleyMarketing.com. It's Todd with two Ds, and Haley is H-A-L-E-Y. And we actually had our first one come in from Debbie, who wanted to know, can Facebook jobs really land me more applications? That's a great question and obviously a very big topic in staffing right now. So we will get to that later on in the show. But first, let's bring in this week's guest. He is the founder of Charted Path, a performance consulting firm for staffing companies. He's Mike Cleland. Mike, thanks so much for joining us this week.
No, I appreciate you having me.
What we like to do at the beginning of each episode here is have our guests give us a quick 60-second elevator pitch on Charted Path, who you guys are and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So Charted Path is a management consulting company focusing exclusively on the staffing industry. So we work with executives and owners of staffing companies that are trying to reach accelerated levels of growth. A lot of companies we work with have either plateaued in growth or they're considering new strategies, market strategies, in order to accelerate their growth. We also work with private equity firms that help them assess the growth potential of potential investments. We only work with leaders, either executives or their executive team. So we don't do any kind of sales or recruiting training. We primarily focus on the leadership development and the execution of strategy.
And what made you get started in the staffing industry? Why did you pick this industry?
I started in the staffing industry in 1994. Actually, worked for the Center for Disease Control as a contractor, and the company that I work with was a staffing company, and they were starting a commercial division. So I kind of got involved in that, and then just started with a small IT staffing company in 1994, and we grew to about 60 to 65 million. I was president of the organization. Then I left there in 2009 to start Charted Path.
Over that time, you've seen a lot of ups and downs in the industry here. We're kind of in a pretty good spot right now. We've been there for a while, but does that make you a little nervous? Do you feel like kind of another downturn is coming here soon?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, obviously, it potentially could be there. I think what's interesting, though, is that, you know, when you have long periods of growth, what tends to happen is the discipline, the operational discipline within an organization kind of can atrophy or actually decline. And it's kind of hidden because, you know, growth hides a lot of issues, right? Organizations, when there is a downturn, those things are quickly revealed. And so the scope of the problems internally could be much larger and more difficult to deal with. So while the downturns certainly do happen, it's really whether or not an organization's really remain disciplined and focused through the good times so they're able to, you know, properly maneuver through the more difficult times.
And I know that that's kind of the basis, you know, being prepared and having a commitment to growth is kind of the basis of your new book. Tell us a little bit about the book and how that came to be.
Well, so the first book that I wrote, the Behind the Wheel book, was more of kind of a operations manual, kind of a management book on, you know, the kind of the gears of a staffing company and how to manage them. This is a leadership book. And the reason why I wanted to write it was because really the driver of sustainable growth in a staffing organization is directly linked to the skills and capabilities of the leadership team. And whether that leadership team is really has the necessary disciplines lined up that are required in order to grow. And so the book, for that reason, you know, while the first book was something me just writing about the, you know, the internals of a staffing organization, we really wanted to tap into what great leaders have done and how they've had to change as leaders as their organizations have grown, and how their leaders had to change as leaders, as their organization has grown. So, you know, we had a great opportunity to interview with a lot of great staffing executives. You know, they were very upfront and honest about the struggles that they had, both personally and professionally, as well as, you know, working with, you know, developing their own teams, and really validated kind of the fundamental premise that the pathway to growth is directly linked to the strength of the leadership team.
Throughout all those conversations, what are some of the either stuff that you've seen or stuff that they've actually admitted to you that were some of the biggest mistakes that staffing leaders make?
So I would say the biggest mistake is not knowing what you want to build to begin with. So if I'm sitting with a staffing executive or a founder, and if you ask that person, you know, do you want to grow? The answer is always yes. Nobody really answers that question no. The leaders that we spoke to, though, really did want to grow. And when they were at these crossroads, whether it was, you know, taking certain risk, or, you know, putting out a large amount of capital, or, you know, having to let go of a good friend who's no longer fit within the organization, when they reached those big personal and professional crossroads, they took the direction of growth. They were committed to growth to begin with, and they were willing to make those personal and professional sacrifices. It's okay to want a lifestyle company. But just understand what that looks like and what that means. And it's obviously okay to want to grow a company, but you have to go with your eyes open and understanding there's really, you know, while there are maybe small compromises that you can make, it really takes an intense amount of focus and commitment in order to drive the organization. So that would be, I would say that came out. What was interesting is that the discipline of commitment was the last one that we identified. That was through a roundtable with interviewing all these executives, but it became so clear that each one of them just had that vision that they wanted to build something, and the driver of that was both personal and professional. A lot of it had to do with legacy, a lot of it had to do with just wanting to build something. So that would be the first thing, is not really knowing what you're truly committed to, like how far are you willing to grow how far are you willing to go to grow your organization. You know, secondly, I would say is really not having a kind of a clear understanding of the direction of the organization. So you say you want to grow, but, you know, what is your place in the market? You know, what are you actually carving out to take market share? And a lot of times that's kind of poorly defined, and executives kind of just kind of let their current client base define the direction of the company. And I'm a strong believer in having an intentional growth strategy that, yeah, you can take on business and that might not be directly related to that growth strategy, but your investments in sales and your investments in your operations are directly linked with a clear vision of a point A to point B that's driven by a well-defined strategy. And so what's interesting is that those two things, commitment and direction, are kind of the most strategic disciplines that really have to be established before you worry about anything else. And so if you don't worry about those two, if you're not clear about those two things, then what ends up happening is the third mistake, which is managers focus on problems that are visible versus problems that are root causes. So what I mean by that is that if you're walking through your organization, you're talking to your people, you're going to see process problems and compliance problems and even training problems within the organization. None of those really matter, though. You can try to tweak those things, but if you don't really have a strong sense of commitment within the team in order to grow and a strong strategy, you really don't have the context necessary to make those improvements. So you're always going to have those kind of issues creep up. And then in the center of that, of course, is the culture of the organization, right? That's where everything, that's kind of the fulcrum point of everything is the culture. And that's another area where people have a tendency to try to fix operational issues And yet there's a fundamental cultural problem that's driven by a lack of direction and a lack of commitment on the team. And if with that cultural problem, if you don't fix the culture, you can't fix anything else. Any solution that you're going to place is going to be temporary and poorly adopted by the team.
I'm glad you brought up culture. That kind of leads me to one of the things I wanted to talk about, too, is there seems to be a big push nowadays to have, you know, such a focus on performance and big data and metrics and analytics. You know, we see it in, we see it in industry. We see it in sports all the time now with analytics, you know, everybody wants to overanalyze everything. But there's some dangers in that, isn't there? There's some pitfalls that companies can kind of fall into if they rely just completely on looking at metrics and looking at numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a double-edged sword, I guess you could say, right? So metrics are great for establishing expectations, you know, for your team so they understand what it means to work in a certain job, right? So if you, but it's not meant to substitute for leadership. And, you know, too often, you know, there are many people that kind of think, well, if I put this management system in place, if I have a metric system in place, then my organization just becomes kind of this turnkey organization. And so they kind of implement all these systems and they don't quite do what they expect them to do, drive the right behavior. So then they come up with more systems and it gets tighter and tighter and tighter, right? Well, the problem obviously with that is the more you manage to metrics, the less innovation and independence producers will actually have. And so they become less collaborative. They become less motivated. They become much less effective at problem solving, because by establishing all these systems, kind of this heavy blanket of all these systems in place, you know, you define their job so narrowly that it's kind of choked out any kind of creativity or motivation in the job, and it can kill the culture. So I'm a minimalist, actually. When it comes to performance management, you know, managing metrics to performers, I'm very much a minimalist, trying to come up as few metrics as possible, manage to them, you know, in a very deliberate way, in a very focused way. And there's a difference, right, in terms of the metrics that you use to manage behavior of your team and the metrics you use to understand what's going on within an organization. So you need metrics to understand what's actually happening from an operational perspective. But when it comes to like individuals, you want to be very careful in terms of the metrics that you're using, and do they actually fit into the culture? And, you know, are you trying to use the metrics as kind of a substitute for leadership? And in a way, that's when you really start getting into trouble, because there's a very limited, without leaderships, metrics really don't accomplish much of anything.
Well, I'm wondering also how that ties into talent development, because we hear, you know, one of the big issues, not finding candidates for their clients, but for staffing firms, finding internal staff. You know, we hear a lot of turnover internally in the staffing industry. So how does that kind of connect there? You know, and you said, you know, that makes their jobs less innovative, less motivational. You know, is this one of the big things that's really stopping a lot of staffing firms from growing, is that internal staff turnover?
Well, it is. I mean, I think you're always going to look at 50%. I mean, I've seen it pretty consistently that within a year, most new hires are either failing or out of the job within a year. And that's pretty, I see that, which is a lot to begin with. And that has to do, obviously, when you're hiring college grads, they don't know what they want. I mean, I didn't know. Okay. I mean, I don't know many people that really know, okay, this is what I want to do when I get out of college. And so, you know, there's that factor in it. But so when you look at the metrics, you know, how I view the metrics when it comes to talent development, for example, if I'm hiring young, which is a lot of what people are doing today, obviously, is hiring young. You do want upstream metrics. You want to measure and you want to hold them accountable to calls and screens and, you know, activity-based controllable metrics, because you're teaching them the job, right? That's how you're teaching them how to run their desk, right? But as somebody gets more experience, or if you're hiring experienced people, first of all, if you're hiring somebody with 5 or 6 years of experience and you're having to manage them to calls, then you've probably hired the wrong person, right? Yeah. That person should come in knowing how to do the basic blocking and tackling of their desk to begin with, and they should already have those habits established. the new people don't have, you know, people out of college don't have any of those things. They don't have habits. They don't understand the job. So that structure in terms of the upstream metrics makes a lot of sense. But my argument is that once somebody gets more established in the job and once they start understanding their job more effectively, then the focus switches more towards, you know, the kind of the result, more towards the result side of the metric spectrum, right? So if I look at, for recruiters, for example, it's, you know, I look at submissions and hires as kind of the basic thing. I don't care how you get your submissions. I don't care if you make 100 emails. I don't care if you make 100 calls. Yeah. All I care about is I get the submissions, because that's kind of the first deliverable for a recruiter is the submission. And then, of course, the placement is the result metric. And as, and then you look at the ratios to make sure the quality is in place. On the account management side or sales side, it's, you know, depending on the type of salesperson, there's a lot more different types of sales roles. But if you're looking like a typical kind of retail salesperson, the first deliverable is the qualified job order, right? And, you know, the job order, and then, of course, the placements. And like I said, there's a lot of different types of sales roles, but really most roles you can kind of boil down to two or three key metrics for a mature, experienced person that's running their desk.
I also wonder too, when I love asking the question to our guests, how did you get into the staffing industry? And just about everybody says, well, it was by accident, or, you know, we even had one of our recent guests say, well, nobody at 15 or 16 years old says, I want to work for a staffing company. You know, it's, is there a problem in this industry as a whole that they're not educating people at a younger age, at a college level? You know, there's, you can't really, I majored in marketing and I work in marketing. You can't really major in staffing and then go work for a staffing firm. Is there a bigger issue problem here in the staffing industry?
You know, I don't know. You know, there could be. I think there are a lot of companies that are doing a good job heading to the colleges and recruiting out of colleges. You know, if the Insight Globals of the world's kind of, and the Tech Systems of the world kind of leading the charge in that end, and there are other firms that do that. So I think there are people that are finding out, you know, about the business, you know, earlier. I do think that the business in general kind of does have an image issue a bit, and which is really unfortunate, like, because it is a great business. Like, we put people to work, and it's a business that we should be proud of. And, you know, and part of, and that was actually part of the motivations of doing what I do, because I think we underserve our business. Like, we need to actually be prouder of what we do and represent it in a way that demands more respect, honestly. So, because it's great. I mean, I have a lot of, you know, friends that are in a lot of different businesses, and I compare kind of what they do versus what, you know, what we do in staffing. And I'm like, you know what, we size up pretty well in terms of the overall impact on people's lives and community and things like that. So I think there's a kind of an image problem, you know, with the business, you know, that's kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you brought that up. It's something that I've mentioned on this show before, but you're right. We should be prouder of the work that we do in the staffing industry, because it's not just filling a job position and putting somebody, you know, in a warehouse. It's, you're giving people a job. You're giving them money. You're giving them a life sometimes for some of these people. And it's an aspect of the staffing industry that I don't think staffing firms do a good enough job of promoting, both to clients and to candidates. Just that, that feel good story of, hey, I'm helping somebody provide for their families.
Right. And yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're kind of in this weird space where we don't provide, you know, managed services necessarily, consulting services. So then you have, you know, you have kind of the system integrators that, you know, do all these big solutions. But who do they turn to get all the people for those projects? It's the staffing companies, right? So, you know, it's and so that I would argue that that's more so. I think not necessarily even making more people aware of staffing. I guess, you know, what I would like to say is make them appreciate the industry for what it actually provides. And obviously that's a tall order, but I think it starts with us having a lot of pride in terms of what we do.
All right, we're going to take a real quick break. When we get back, I want to talk to Mike about, you know, how do we actually put all of these ideas into practice and actually execute them? It's all coming up on The Secrets of Staffing Success.
This is David Cerns, CEO of Haley Marketing, and thanks so much for listening to Secrets of Staffing Success. If you're looking for new ways to improve sales, or these days, attract talent, our team would love to help. Check out our website at haleymarketing.com, or better yet, give us a call at 888 696-2900 and let us know where your staffing business needs help. Our consultants will be happy to brainstorm ideas for you. Thanks again for listening. And now let's head back to Todd.
We've talked a lot about the concepts and the culture and the leadership, but I know another big part of your book is the actual execution when it comes time to actually doing all of these great ideas and all these innovations. What are some of the best, for firms that are looking to really grow in the next 2 to 3 years, what are some of those scalable practice examples that you can give to our listeners?
Well, I think what's important is to actually have them. I mean, and that's that's kind of step one. And what I mean by that is that a lot of people just hire folks and they kind of train them, but there's really no rigor behind how a desk is actually run on a day-to-day basis, what tools are being used, why those tools are being used, the utilization rate of those tools. And just to kind of back into this a little bit, you can't answer any of those questions unless you know what your strategy is, right? So if you look at like the discipline of market leaders, for example, so the discipline of market leaders, I can't remember the author's name right now, made a really kind of good point. It's not a bad way to look at staffing, is that, you know, organizations take market share. You know, they came up with three basic ways they take market share. One is through operational excellence. One is through a high level of customer service. And the third is product innovation. Well, if you look at staffing, for example, it's really the first two that they fall into. And if you're going to drive operational excellence as your primary differentiator and efficiency and things like that, then having streamlined operations and actual minimal collaboration internally and real streamlined collaboration directly with the client, like if you're focusing on VMS or MSP, is really the success factor. Or are you going to be a more consultative staffing company where service is your differentiator? Well, then you have to bake in a culture of collaboration, mm-hmm. you know, a productive conflict. And the metrics and everything that we use are very different. The tools you're going to use are going to be very different. So one of the things I talk about in the book is that the idea of a best practice, for example, is kind of a dangerous way to look at it. I would say that, like, what I talked about was like, yeah, you could say there's a best practice for compliance and there's a best practice for things like, you know, paying people on time and things like that. But when it comes down to what makes you better than the competition, what allows you to take market share, what I use is the term competitive practice, which is really the day-to-day things that make your company take market share that are really, really unique, that are a combination of culture and processes and tools and training and all those things. And it's a machine that kind of all works together mm-hmm. to perform, right? So the practices are not separated from culture. They're actually in very much interlinked. They're very much intertwined. So you have to know, for example, the recruiting desk is going to look a certain way, for example, and you know that if you're going to be driving quality of service as your primary differentiator, that your recruiters aren't going to get out 100 submittals a month, right?
Right.
That their close rates have to look a certain way, that they have to screen the candidates a certain way, that they have to interact and collaborate with account managers a certain way, or maybe even talk to clients, you know, directly talk to clients. All those things go into developing your own competitive practices. And the key is to define them first, and secondly, put energy into scaling them in a consistent way. So there is no silver bullet, so to speak. it's really understanding your strategy, it's understanding your culture, and it's understanding from a day-to-day basis what does a desk have to look like. And it is different for every company. Now, from a high level, I can kind of give some high level things that I see that people, you know, good companies do. You know, from a sales perspective, they're very disciplined in defining the territories that their sales teams call on. You know, they're disciplined from account penetration. They know how to do account planning. They know how to penetrate accounts. For their business development people, you know, they have lead generation programs, and they really drive meetings, and they do those things effectively. There's constant training, you know, around those things. And the sales manager is involved and out in the field with the sales team and doing those things. The biggest mistake, it's kind of funny, the biggest mistake I see organizations do is they don't define a territory for their sales team. They just let people go. And that's simply not effective. And on the recruiting side, it's knowing the sourcing tools that are most effective for your book of business, and, you know, and making sure that your team is fully utilizing the tools that they have. You know, a mistake I see people make is they buy a lot of tools, but the utilization of the tools is incredibly low. Like recruiters kind of pick and choose their favorites. So it's really making sure that they're using everything available to them in order to be, you know, in order to be successful. Don't assume that they're using them just because you bought it. Mm. It simply doesn't happen.
At the beginning of this conversation, we talked a little bit about, you know, possible downturn on the horizon here. Yeah. Other than that, what should staffing firms really be worried about over the next 1 to 2 years?
That's an interesting question. Obviously, technology is a disruptor, you know, in our industry, and it's changed the landscape. You know, if you look at anything from job boards to VMS, you know, technology has kind of really been a big kind of sculpted the landscape, I guess you could say. Mm. And so when you look at these tools and these online tools and things like that, the question is will staffing, is it possible for staffing to be considered a middleman in the acquisition of talent? And can companies actually bring these in? I mean, is this idea of this total talent management with this combination of being able to manage contingent labor and perm and direct labor and organizations taking more of that on themselves, is that possible? And there's a lot of talk around that. And yeah. Obviously, I just don't see it. Like my whole thing is that I think it's going to be more of, if you look at the penetration rate of what we do, it's about 2%. I mean, it's not... There's a lot of room to grow within the industry. And I honestly think that anything that increases the use of contingent labor just increases the pool and increases the size of the market for us to play in. And there's really no trends around consolidation. And there's some consolidation going on, but it's still highly fragmented. So, you know, from that perspective, I think it's fine. I think what I would be worried about is if I was a $30 to $50 million company, because that's where it gets tricky to kind of maintain your size while not trying to take on too much. And so those are the companies that kind of find themselves, you know, where, you know, they might have started in a specific market and now they have these big enterprise counts that, you know, to take on and, you know, all these different things. And so now they have to manage a much more complex operation. And it's honestly, it's the ability to kind of maintain and still grow from that, you know, that 30 to 50 to kind of break out of that and get to the, you know, the 60 to 70, you know, $60 to $70 million range, because, you know, you could lose, those companies just seem to be a lot of times just more vulnerable to losing a large account and having their sales force kind of atrophy over time. And I've just seen those types of those size of companies actually be a lot more vulnerable to market fluxes and things like that than others, because they're kind of stuck in this way where they're large, but they're not large enough where it's a big competitive advantage, but they're large enough to be less adaptable in their local markets. And that's where they get into trouble, where they just kind of stagnate. And then when the world changes around them, they don't know how to adapt to it. So from a macro perspective, I always tell people, it's like, well, you're a $10 million company. You can find, regardless of what the economy does, if you're good at executing, you're going to grow. Right. But when you get to like, you know, that $30 to $50 million range, it gets a little bit tougher. Obviously the talent, you know, there's issues with the talent pool, not just in the professional staffing side, but in the light industrial side, even, you know, you just finding people who are qualified, you know, to go in and work warehouse work and things like that. It's really, really tight. And if that doesn't change, obviously, you know, that could be a pretty significant inhibitor, you know, to growth as well, as just the qualified labor pool out there.
Well, we've talked a lot about the concepts in the book, so before I let you go, I want to give you a chance to plug the book and let everybody know more about it and where they can pick up a copy for themselves.
Yeah, so the name of the book is Breaking Through and Leadership Disciplines of Top Performing Staffing Firms, and you can find it on Amazon or you can find it on my website, charterpath.com. The book is really made for leaders who, you know, want to grow their organization and want to get to the $100 million plus mark. Or even if they're kind of stuck at a 15 to 20, you know, market, they're kind of an owner operator situation and they want to get to the point where they don't have to be in the office every day. Well, what does that look like? Right. If you know, I'm still selling, I'm doing all this stuff. How do I build a company where I don't have to be there every single day? So, it basically gives you a roadmap. It gives, regardless of your size, if you're 10 million, 20 million, 50 million, 80 million, you know, it gives you kind of this roadmap and things to look out for. in terms of what you need to do in order to grow your organization, what your leadership team needs to do in order to grow your organization, and what are the things you need to look out for that you know, that might inhibit growth or actually threaten you in a way that could cause your company to take a step backwards. So it's it has a lot of good information in terms of perspectives from different staffing leaders, including the mistakes they've made and great decisions that they've made. And I think it outlines nicely the kind of leadership capabilities your team needs, as well as the kind of obstacles they're going to run into as your company grows.
Excellent. He's Mike Cleland from Charted Path. You can check him out at chartedpath.com. Mike, I can't thank you enough for sharing all of the secrets of staffing success that you've seen from a lot of the firms that you've been dealing with over these many years. Continued success to you. And again, thank you so much for joining us this week.
No, I appreciate it.
Wow, that was a really great conversation with Mike there. And I really recommend picking up his book. You can check it out at chartedpath.com. It's also up on Amazon as well. The one takeaway I have from Mike, and I think it's the one that we really need to seriously start thinking about as much as we want to, you know, not think about it, is when is that downturn coming? We're due. We're overdue for a downturn now. And I loved his statement about, you know, the complacency that we get into when things are going really well. And we see this all the time with staffing companies, that they think because everything's going great that now is not the time to change anything up or you know, take a look at your processes because things are going well and you're busy and you don't have time for that stuff. But now is the time to take a look at things like your internal process. How can you improve upon it? How can you make it more efficient? How can you deliver candidates more quickly? Also, just take a look at some of your marketing materials. Does your website need to be updated? Are your collaterals up to date? Could those use a refresh? What's your social media strategy right now? Now's the time when business is good and that cash flow is good to address these things. Because if there is a downturn coming, and there probably is, cash flow might be a little tighter. So your website might not be a priority and your marketing collateral might not be a priority and you might not have the funds to invest in social media. But now's the time to do that stuff when cash flow is good and when things are going well. So don't fall into that trap of complacency when things are going well. Make sure you take the time now to address any potential issues down the road. Because like he said, the downturn will kind of bring any issues to light very, very quickly. All right, I want to get to our question that I teased a little bit at the beginning there. Again, it came from Debbie, and she asked about Facebook jobs. Can they really land me more applications? And really, the answer is yes. We've been doing a lot of studies on this with our clients that are using Facebook jobs. And just to kind of give you an idea, I'm just going to highlight a couple of them here. One is a staffing firm in Pennsylvania, and in a 5-day test study, they got 42 applications for 3 different jobs: security guard, brewery production worker, and a sit-down forklift operator. We had another staffing firm in Ohio who did a 5-day test study, and 13 applications were generated for a material operator and a chemical operator. And the third one is a staffing firm in New Jersey who did a 5-day test study, and they got 19 applications for an admin assistant and a leasing professional. So the takeaway here is, yeah, it really is doing a great job of bringing in applicants. And the nice thing is we're seeing it across multiple disciplines. You just heard me mention a whole bunch of different jobs there. So it's not just one specific niche or one specific industry that we're really seeing success with. We're seeing it across multiple industries and multiple niches. So it's definitely something that you want to take a look at. And of course, our team at Haley Marketing here are becoming experts in Facebook jobs. So make sure you reach out to us if you're interested in learning more about that and how we can help you kind of solidify your social media strategy, not just from a selling perspective, but from a candidate lead generation application perspective. So make sure you reach out to us if you're interested in that as well. That will do it for this week's show. I want to thank our guest, Mike Cleland from Charted Path. ChartedPath.com is where you can go for more information on Mike's company and his book as well. And again, if you have any questions that you'd like us to address in future episodes, just shoot me an email, Todd, T-O-D-D, at HaleyMarketing.com. It's H-A-L-E-Y. And of course, you can download this show on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher, on Spotify, all the usual places where you would find a podcast. And if you are enjoying the show, please shoot us a review on any of those platforms. We'd always appreciate it. And we will talk to you next time on Secrets of Staffing Success.